Hacking the Reality, intervju z Mario Perez. Mesto žensk je letos že četrto leto pospremila spletna platforma, ki je bila tokrat namenjena kritiškemu pisanju o dogajanju na festivalu. Spletna stran CoWeb je oblikovalo več kot 20 piscev. Urednik strani je bil Samo Gosarič. Mi pa smo se v tokratni posebni ediciji oddaje Sektor Ž pogovarjali z njihovo mentorico, novo medijsko kritičarko in publicistko PTQK Marijo Perez, o njenem samostojnem predavanju o cyberfeminizmu. Obravnavala je predvsem surovo simbiozo med človekovo svobodo in trgom dela ter med človekovim telesom in njegovo farmacevtsko preparirano inačico. Marija Perez je kulturna producentka in specialistka za nove medije iz Katalonije. Kot kustosinja, producentka in publicistka je sodelovala s festivalom Music Ex Machina, feminističnim net radijom Radio Pakam, kreativnim centrom Hunger in tako naprej. Leta 2005. Je v Barceloni organizirala mednarodno konferenco o cyberfeminizmu. V letu 2007. Pa srečanje za digitalno kulturo in nove medije Netlah v Bilbao.
Maria, I was expecting quite different lecture. You caught me by surprise. My first set of questions before the lecture was kind of very different. More thinking into the direction of semantics and technology that is used and how semantics as male-oriented, product-oriented hegemony, that it actually influences the way we are using technology. Could you first comment on that and then we'll come to what your lecture actually was about?
Me too, when I begin to be involved in cyberfeminism, I concentrated a lot on that, and I think it's still very important the way that structures, semantic structures, language, but also technology, conditions the way we communicate and the way we think, how we should subvert these structures, these languages, to turn them into something emancipatory. That the first cyberfeminism was a lot about that, and I still believe in it a lot, but at some points the reality of what was going on was so big and so far from that we had to come to a more concrete level, in the sense that this was very abstract and it is reflected upon technology, but not only on technology, that we are always limited by, I mean, language and the way we express ourselves are always in a patriarchist shape, so I don't know to what extent we are free to think outside of patriarchism, because our words, our concepts come from patriarchists, so we are all products of patriarchism, men, women, everybody of that way of thinking.
So what this emancipatory process actually is about is actually what you stated well in the lecture as well, that we are hacking the ideas, or so to speak, we are hacking the realities. It's not so much about hacking the technology and changing the technology, but trying to comprehend the content that makes us think in a certain way.
Yeah, because changing the technology itself, it's so difficult, and the essays we've made, they didn't work. So we had to look for something else. For instance, free software, all the open software movement is a lot about that, about free technology, free in the way we produce technology. In fact, free software movement has been also a laboratory for new forms of free labor. And now, if you surf, for instance, in blogs about new management, what I do a lot, the new science of management, they use the same discourse that we were talking about in the hack labs, in the hacker culture scene. So that has been a disappointment. So somehow we have lost something there, and we don't know how to come back to that.
I think it's a point where you have to try to define what free actually nowadays means, and oh, what a beautiful word, but what does it really mean now?
Well, freedom does not exist. It's always, as an absolute concept, it's always relative. It has always a context, a situation. So you are more or less free, but sometimes you think you are free, and in fact you are not. Now we live in a world where, for instance, free market or free freedom, a lot of words are being made in the name of freedom. So I don't really believe that it's so much about freedom, because we are all white and wealthy, and we want to be more and more and more free, but our freedom, or what we call our freedom, is very much dependent on the misery and the slavery of other people. And this is something that we have to accept. We don't want to hear about it, but we have to accept it. So being things like that, I don't know if the freedom is the most important thing we have to look for. I would rather think about justice, equality, or emancipation, which might be similar to freedom. But freedom today is a very problematic concept.
We come to free labor, which actually means slave labor in a way, you know, by your own free will again. And we come to the ideology that you talked about also, the ideology of post-Fordism and the way work management and work industry is dispatched over the world, and how this ideology works in the sense of post-colonial or current colonial hegemony.
Well, coming back to the free software and to the social web, we are all working for free. I think we are expressing ourselves, and in fact we are making a work that is being capitalized by some other people, and this from one side. From other side, of course, there's still a lot of labor which is not free, but in very, we could call, unhuman conditions, and our wealth, way of life, depends on that a lot, and that's something we have to be confronted to. So the new conditions of labor, also this big discourse, which is very much into post-Fordism as well, that you are your own boss, you know, this funky business kind of thing, you're freelance, and that's the best thing you can do. Is also a way to eliminate any possibility of the traditional unions, workers' unions, and labor solidarity among workers. So of course, if you are your own boss, that means that your colleague is not really a colleague. It's someone that can get the work out of you. So and then also political relations begin to change from a traditional left-wing thinking.
How does this relate to the free access to usage of all the tools?
There's no such thing as free access. In fact, we are completely controlled through this so-called free access. Of course, we want to have free access to knowledge, but the problem is we don't know how to manage, how to handle such an amount of knowledge. I am a big militant for copyleft and open source against intellectual property, but the battle does not end there. Then other problems begin to arise, like the extreme noise, informational noise we cannot handle, and the access to information again is only for very high skilled people. You have to be very, not only you have to have access to the technology and to the knowledge, you have to have the skills to interpret this knowledge properly and turn it into something socially constructive and not into something that just entertains you. And in internet, of course, they call it knowledge. It's not exactly knowledge. What there is a lot of entertainment.
You were talking about the experience that is brought about by the internet industry, that is not about being free in the sense of the real in-depth knowledge, but free in the sense of consumer ideology. What was produced before freelance, or the internet ideology of Web 2.0 of you are the maker of your own destiny?
Both of them became to be spread all over the world at historically a bit at the same time. Of course, freelance work has always existed, but this new funky business ideology we began to talk about in the early this decade after the 90s, and exactly at the same moment that Web 2.0 was beginning to be a reality. So somehow I think that one intervened into the other and was inspired by the other, and there the technology and the technological supported society helped very much to the rise of this, again, ideology that the best you can do as a worker is to be a free worker. Basically, we don't have now conceptual tools to think about that in a proper way. Until the 80s or the 90s, at least, we could still use all the concepts of the Marxism and labor in an old sense, but now we've lost all that. It doesn't work. Even the class struggle cannot be expressed strictly in the same manner. Of course, there's a lot of class division in the world we live, but not as it used to be. In Western societies, we're all middle class. So working class has somehow disappeared. Working class has been transformed into middle class, and now we're all wealthy and we have a TV and a car, etc. With consumer society, working class has been delocalized, and we have to rebuild a conceptual approach to that and then be able maybe to transform it into practice, into radical political practice.
With the emergence of digital media and the illusion that the tangibility of the labor and tangibility of the product of the labor is lost, you pointed out that this is not at all true, that only it has, like you said, delocalized, so shifted to the places where you also mentioned that apart from all the production of the technology, that is Asia mostly, they also take most of the e-waste, so-called, I would say, the skeletons of computers and other electronic equipment. The ideology of ecology, in a way, let's keep everything tidy, but, you know, have it out of sight.
Yeah, it's a lot about having it all out of sight and new forms of soft power. What I was trying to argue is that post-Fordism, of course, it's a new economical model, but it's also very much a discourse, a set of ideas that is being spread to make us believe in this new reality where factories have disappeared, where trash does not exist, just the same as death that does not exist. I mean, it's linked with a lot of things. Power is working a lot in the invisible and the very, very, very small. In the 20th century, power was monumental. Totalitarian states were building very, very big buildings. Now, the new form of fascism is efficiency, is based on the invisibility, on making things really, really small and like pills. We take them and they become part of our body, and they're a form of control. And the same with the internet, with the iPod, with the mobile phone. I mean, you carry a mobile phone with a camera everywhere. So it's been sold like a form of freedom, because you can call your friends anytime and find them where they are. Okay, but...
Okay, so we come now to the last point, which was actually the core of your lecture, is about hacking the reality. And you did that through the project of an activist, of art experimentator or live experimentator. And you were talking about the control of pharmacology in our lives, which is like a little bit what we wouldn't expect from cyber feminism, but so to say that like cyber feminism for you shifted from hacking the internet into hacking the reality.
Yeah, I was talking about the work of Beatriz Preciado, who is a queer activist, but she's also a philosopher. And she argues that we are now living in what she calls the era of pharmaco-pornographical regime. Both the drugs, the legal drugs, and the selling of a possibility of a sexual interaction on the web, they express a form of very post for this, in that they want to sell just experiences. Now the possibility, the promise of an experience, which is completely intangible. And yes, of course it is very cyberfeminist, but the problem is that first cyberfeminism was just as first wave of digital activism was completely fascinated. We were, I have to say in first person, we were completely fascinated by the possibilities of technology. And when technology began to really develop and really get into people's life and change society, we began to be aware that in fact it was a new form of dominance. So we have to find new ways of turning this again, to reverse this again. Feminism is mainly a critical approach to reality. It has to be critical, and cyberfeminism has to be critical upon technology. It cannot fall into fascination.
For example, birth control, which has become or still is a really big part of female emancipatory movement, which means that we are able to have freedom of choice. But again, here we come to the point where we can observe through pharmacology that we have became like softened, enslaved by what you have called the
panoptic. Well, the pill, it's a drug. It's not only that avoids pregnancy, it's also a drug that an hormonal treatment, and hormones are drugs. They have a strong effect on the body, and nobody tells you that. And the thing is that women's body again and again are being manipulated. Of course, it's great to take the pill so you don't get pregnant. I'm not saying that. I'm not stating against the pill. I am not, of course. But we women should be able to have all the information, what's really what we are taking and where does it come from, and not, I mean, the pill gets you weaker, it makes your breast bigger, so you are the perfect woman, you know, and you don't get pregnant, so you're ready for sex, you're passive, your skin is soft, and we have to know that also. Also the fact that the pill, just as any other chemical, is being tested first on other women, which are not you, which are taken as guinea pigs, women mostly from poorest countries. A lot of the Western female emancipation is made possible by new forms of female enslavement in other parts of the world. The same with housework. Housework today is being made by migrant, illegal women.
Iz izobraževalnega programa Mesta žensk je v vaša ošesa Mario Perez pripeljala Ida Ha.